Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a lighting designer who has worked with artists such as AFI, Deftones, Primus, Papa Roach, Incubus, At the Drive-In, System of a Down, and The Neighborhood. In this episode, we discuss what it has been like living through a pandemic, re-examining your relationship between you and your career, the value of live performances for fans, artists, and crew, as well as the importance of prioritizing transparency and collaboration over competition. You can find him on Instagram at Graham Rolick. Here is my conversation with Graham Rolick. Graham, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to have you. I'm excited to talk. Well, I'm excited to get to know you a little bit. And I'm also excited to talk about some of the cool things that you've been up to. So could you start by letting me know kind of how did you even get started in the industry?
Well, I've been doing this for just about 10 or 11 years. I got started as most of us do. I was bartending and, you know, in service industry and kind of just fell into the right place at the right time to help start working with an ambiance crew in Outside Lands for Another Planet Entertainment. Just happenstance, being at a bar, complaining about a festival, and the person next to me was like, I work for that festival. Do you want to help? And that's pretty much how that started. You know, tale as old as time. After years of doing that, I kind of wanted to get a little bit more involved and got into stage management. And that put me into connection with kind of like the lighting, live visual stuff that I was like, oh, this is actually something I'm good at. And I mean, I've been playing in bands and touring and go to South by Southwest and shows since like high school. So I was always like in the music scene. And it was just one of those like, all right, I'm just going to get into it, and had a couple mentors really help out and, you know, saw that I wasn't a total nightmare to work with, I suppose. At least wasn't then. And, you know, just kind of went from there.
Tell me a little bit about your interactions with your mentors. How did the first mentor pop up?
The first one is a guy named Alistair Watson. He's a good friend of mine from the UK. And he was in the Bay Area with me. We both worked in San Francisco. We worked for this company called Impact Lighting. And I was like working on a lighting board, just messing around for like a wedding band. And he was like, oh, you've got pretty good timing. Like, would you be interested in like pursuing this? And I was like, yeah, of course. I mean, I'm 22 years old at the time. Like, I'll pursue pretty much anything that has a paycheck or, you know, something different. And so we kind of just got to talking and we worked on a couple gigs together. And then he was I wouldn't say out of the blue, but I'm sure he was like kind of grooming me or like getting me ready to go on tour. And he was like, hey, I've got a tour coming up with AFI and I can't do it because I'm doing a different tour. Would you be interested? And I was like, sure. How hard could it be? Because again, 22, super excited and very cocky. And very much trial by fire. Went over to his house for like 4 days, worked on some of the programming with him, and then just got on a bus and, you know, probably called him from like hiding in front of house under the desk multiple times for the first couple weeks until I got a hang of it. And he was like, he was definitely like the biggest mentor for at least like, you kind of just have to put it all in. Like, cause I don't know if I'm sure you know through the podcasts you've done, it's not exactly like a school driven group of people. Like, I mean, there are plenty of us who have degrees, in various things, but none of them are what we do. Like no one's like, oh, I went to lighting design school. And not that there aren't theater kids, but it's just a different, you know, it's a hard industry to crack into without just like literally being a wallflower at a bar or at a venue. Like it's hard to like, you know, where do I apply to put me on tour? Is there an application? Can I fill something out? Yeah, so that's kind of how I got onto my first tour, my first like big tour.
That's really interesting. I mean, it's funny how things will fall in your lap, and if you're brave enough and young enough to take the risk, you'll do it, huh?
Yeah, and I think that it was just one of those like, why not? Like I was living in Oakland at the time, and I mean, I was working on festivals and venues, and I was like a production runner for a little while, and just kind of any job that I could get my hands on was like, I'll go for this. So it didn't really have any, you know, I didn't have a life plan, still don't, but definitely didn't then.
Do you feel that, and you know, that sounds like a story that is close to my heart, you know, kind of just doing whatever life throws at you and hoping that it amounts to something. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate, but now in retrospect, do you see how different parts of your career, you know, just since you started, have led to something? And do you see a future, or what do you think?
I always see a future in everything I do, which I think is a big part of the tour mentality in general. I don't think that any of us get into what we do. Most of us don't get into what we do on purpose. And once we get into it and we realize that we can do it, you kind of have this like false or real sense of superiority. Cause like, I don't know a lot of people who live on a bus, but actually that's like exclusively who I know. But you know, most people, when you talk to them, if they have like what I would consider like a 9-to-5 job, like, hey, you have a 9-to-5 job. That's cool. Do you live 300 feet away from everyone you work with every night? No. So I think that if you can kind of put up with all of those things, you're kind of just destined to, you clearly are someone who's just going to make whatever work for your happiness. Like, I do think that there's a lot of like connective happiness to touring, because you're good at something that isn't really like, there's no like aptitude test in high school being like, oh, you're going to be a front of house engineer. Oh, you're going to be a monitor. You know, like, it's not a big enough industry to make a market to where people could be like, this is what you'd be good at. So I think that you kind of just have to be this weird, like, misfit toy that's good at things to get into it. So once I think you're into it, you just kind of end up being good at it, because you're always making your own path, because no one's like, this is how we do it. You just have to kind of go for it.
It sounds like there's a lot of experimentation involved.
Yeah. I mean, I think there has to be. And I think that anyone who's happy in jobs or in life, like, you should always be trying to find adventure or experimentation in whatever you do, because otherwise things get stale. I mean, even like as simple as like cooking breakfast in the morning, like if you're making eggs, like, you can make eggs 60 different kinds of ways, but unless you start trying, you're just going to eat the same kind of eggs you always make. And then you're like, well, I don't like eggs anymore. And like, why? So I think there's a little bit of that. I love eggs, by the way.
Because you're boring and you don't like trying new things. That's why. No.
Because you're boring and you only want scrambled eggs. Surely that fits some people. And like, some people like the kind of rigorous regimented schedule that we are bred to have. So.
Yeah, that's funny that you said that we're bred to have. It's funny because I feel like a lot of people nowadays, and I don't know, I mean, obviously I just talk from my own experience, but it's like, you know, you're given sort of like a path, and like, this is like, you know, the thing to look up to is, you know, this 9-to-5 where you go to the office and you have some small talk and then you go home and that's it. And like, that's, and then, yeah, you climb the ladder and that's it. But then when you end up doing something completely different, it gets a little bit scary, and that's when you have to be brave, and that's when you have to get creative.
And I think that, you know, being scared or being fearful of what's going on is just a deeper result of like not knowing yourself. And again, the only way to start knowing yourself is to conquer those or like face that stuff. So like, you know, anybody can stay at a job for 15 years and be unnoticed. Like, that doesn't seem as hard as like, oh, I've got to meet 30 new people every day, or, you know, whatever, you know, not even comparing to me. Like, even I have friends who have quit jobs after 10 years of like working at Gap or working at like, you know, places in San Francisco and tech companies. And like, I'm terrified. It's like, why? Like, if you didn't get the job, it wouldn't even be at this point. So who cares? Like, you know, you're attaching so much more to your life sense than needed.
Yeah, that is funny. It's like, you know, another thing that may have something to do with it is just that we've been trained to kind of look at ourselves as like to define ourselves by what we do and what our career is and the decisions that we make in order to get us to where we are now, without ever really appreciating all of the things that we've done in order to even get there.
Right. And I think that, you know, life is definitely supposed to be about the journey and not just your wish list on Amazon. Not that I don't have one. I think that especially with this pandemic, I think a lot of people woke up during it, regardless of industry, and was like, wow, this is what I've been doing. Like whether you got laid off or furloughed, or even if you kept your job and had to work from home, or, you know, or if you were forced to go back into the office, you know, I think everybody had that moment of like, man, this is pretty serious. Maybe I don't want to do the next 45 years of my life like this until I retire. You know, maybe I could live on half the salary, or maybe I could live on, you know, an island, or move to, you know, Regina, Canada, or like, you know, whatever. Like, I think that a lot of people got to question like their existence, because you don't really get those kinds of pauses. Like everyone gets your vacation time or whatever, but you don't get that shake of like, oh, who knows?
How has that been for you?
I mean, much like all the podcasts I've listened to about the pandemic, and especially in our industry, it has been difficult, but not as difficult as I thought. A good friend of mine, Will Markwell, he's front of house for AFI when I was with them, and Death Cab and a handful of others. We play a lot of video games together, and we, you know, neither of us got our tours canceled in the process. It's like we were home and then didn't get to go on tour, which has happened. Like, you know, you've had a tour cancel, or, you know, something gets moved. And like, so if you're at home waiting to go on tour, it didn't really feel that shocking until my anniversary of having a show. So the last show I did was December 6th, 2019. And when I crossed to December 6th, 2020, it kind of really hit me of like, oh man, like I've 100% been unemployed for a year. Like, because you don't feel it. I mean, you do feel it financially, of course, and, you know, creatively, and, you know, you feel stunted, but you feel that way even if you have 3 months off in between tours anyway. Like you go through this like regression of like, oh, I don't, you know, I'm not going to catering. I have to decide what I want to eat or where I want to go. And like all the decisions become yours again. And you have to kind of get that balance back of like, how do I do this? So it definitely has been a difficult transition. But it's nice to be a part of a community that everyone's dealing with the same thing. Like, you know, it's not like half of us got to keep working or a third of us got to keep working. Like we all got screwed. And again, you know, it is a very serious thing. I'm not like, oh, we should be working even though people are dying. Like I'm definitely not at that point, but like, you know, we are essential workers in the sense that we create and furnish joy for others. Like people get to go to work and then they get to buy tickets and come to see our shows. And that's super important. And clearly when you don't have those kinds of releases and enjoyment of like, you know, going out on a date or taking your family to a whatever, and, you know, like you can see how unhappy, especially our country, gets in those times when you don't have that kind of release of pro sports or music or parades.
Yeah. It all kind of gets pent up
a little bit.
Yeah. So tell me, leading up to it, were you like satisfied with the way that things were going and you were just kind of just trucking along? Or was there anything that now that you've been able to sit back and really analyze how your life was going, like, have you thought about anything that maybe you think should be different moving forward?
Yeah. So going into this, my last show was, let me know if that's too loud. There's a lawnmower. Every day I live in LA now, and every day is trash day or lawnmower day, no matter what day it is. So it's too loud.
It's
I
can
go back closer to the, but going into it, our last show was December 6th. I was out with Incubus and we were doing the 20th anniversary of the Make Yourself tour, which was fantastic. And then my wife and I went to Japan for 2 months to kind of just hang out because I knew I had time off. And then we were supposed to go back out in March, and that did not come. So I was very content and like happy with what I was doing. I'm always working on other projects, creating video content or, you know, trying to find something else to just, you know, exhaust my creativity, be it writing music. I play a lot of hockey. I cook a ton, like just something to keep, you know, juices flowing. So when it started to happen, I got, you know, as many of us did, I got into like making pasta and making bread and, you know, just general carbs to cope with the fact that we're super bummed about not working. But I would say that I was very happy with how things were going. I just liked what I was doing. Like, you know, I mean, it was 10 years. My wife and I moved to LA about 2 years ago because the local work in San Francisco was drying up and San Francisco was just becoming an uninhabitable city unless you work in big tech. So I was like, let's go somewhere where like, if I didn't want to go on the road, I could work elsewhere. Turns out LA, a little bit of an epicenter for pandemic stuff. So that didn't exactly pan out as planned. But I'm just kind of one of those guys that always keeps their ideas open. Like if I got a call being like, hey, do you want to go on a comedy tour or do you want it to go like Top Chef or, you know, production manage a festival. I just like what I'm doing. So
yeah, it sounds like you like what you're doing. And I think, you know, that really does help, especially when you find yourself in a place where you can't do what you were normally doing, but you can still get creative because you have a skill set that you can use and you can find ways to make it malleable and fit into other things so that you're not standing still the entire time. What have you been doing?
So I've done a handful of live streams. And by a handful, I mean a small handful. I just did a live stream with this band, Why Don't We? It's a boy band. They play instruments. They're very talented musicians, young kids, all like 19, 20. We did a show for Kelly Clarkson's show and then one for James Corden and a few other pickups for some like other live streams they sold. So that was fun. That was like, hey, I get to design again. It's in a box and like, you just get to go and work. And it was nice because it felt like tour. In the sense that there was a ton of work ahead of time and then 2 days of frantic freaking out with everybody. And then it was done. And that was nice. And then I also did one with The Neighborhood, earlier this year. And I'd worked with The Neighborhood, with John Berlew and a handful of others for years. And, it was nice going back to them and working on stuff and hearing their new album. And then other than that, I've been working on a little bit of TV stuff here and there. And yeah, I'm just trying to stay creative without getting burnt out on what I do. Like I've made a couple shows and I've designed some stages, but I'm definitely not trying to like, it's hard to not get bitter or jaded in the sense of like, oh, I'm doing all this work for nothing and it might never go anywhere. You want to keep your skills up without having to like exhaust your creative well, I guess.
You know, you just made me think of, I remember one time it was like South By and there was a lighting designer who was with the band that I had been with. And he was like designing the stuff. He was like on his computer and like his whole hotel room was just like computers. And then there was like, he had some sort of program. It just looked, and it was like all dim. And like, it looked like he was very like in it, like trying, you know, and it seemed like a really creative thing, which is interesting because a lot of the interactions that I've had with people are more like on the audio side. And so like, I'll see what's happening with lighting, but I don't ever really see like the creative process that goes into actually making it come to life during a show. And from what you're saying, it sounds like it's extremely creative and you put a lot of time into it. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a creative atmosphere. And there is, just like when, you know, if you're writing songs or, you know, poems or anything you do in a creative field, you definitely get blockages and like writer's block. The double-edged sword of that is like, sometimes I want to enjoy listening to music and I can put headphones on and I can't, cause I'm literally just seeing stages or things I would design or how I would do stuff. It's definitely a fun creativity cause you kind of feel like like a spaceship commander a little bit. Like, you know, I have my whole pre-visual setup and consoles and you get to just kind of play. You're like, okay, I like this. And, you know, And you get to start emoting things that you wouldn't think. Like one of my favorite people in the world, Greg Nelson, who does front of house for Incubus and Pearl Jam, years before we started touring together, I was just like, how do you make Pearl Jam sound so good? And he's like, I just mix how I want to hear the band. And since then I was like, oh, I'm just going to light how I want to hear the band. So like, if this song is, everybody thinks it's, you know, super uplifting and happy, but that's not how I feel about it. Like, I'm going to light it or design it how it makes me feel. And then maybe that'll tap into the greater unconscious of the concert or the, you know, the band. Or so you get to kind of like, you get to work alongside a band in the creative process of what the stipulations and things that they want. And of course, budget and truck size and all that. You get to like the logistical stuff. You have to work inside of a box, but then you then have to see how much you can open up by doing that in the world. You have to like actually tap into like, oh, this is all I can do. I can do this little part of a truck, this little part of a stage, and I have to make 90 minutes or however long they're playing. Everything needs to be explosive and feel like people are going to walk away remembering this. And of course, thanks to like things like Instagram and YouTube, like you want to get beautiful. You want to make it more than just about the person. The creative aspect of what we do, I think, is extremely exciting based purely on, I get to paint. Like, I get to, you know, I had a business card for a long time that just says that I paint with all the colors in the wind, you know, Pocahontas style. Like Pocahontas, yeah. Absolutely. Because that's, you know, that's what we get to do. And it's, I mean, there's some amazing people out there that I get to work with, and it's also nice because you're inspired by others in your same field. Like, I see Darian Koop and I see Bobby Gray and I see all these guys, and I'm like, that's mind blowing. And then you try to take enough of it to where you're kind of copying them, but not copying them, and then put your own twist. And then they see it and they're like, oh, let me do this. And it's similar to like when you're writing music and you're like listening to someone else for your influence. Like, you get to have influence in your own career. And they're also your peers because it's a really small industry.
It's interesting that, you know, being in the industry, or even just ever having an experience where you're not, you know, just a regular, like in a regular seat in the audience, you're actually like able to see like all the people working behind the scenes, it really changes your perspective and it changes the way that you see how a show is put on. And I think that's something that I didn't really understand until I was able to actually do it and do it regularly, because for a long time, it's like, you go to shows, you're like, okay, well, that, you know, it sounded great or it didn't sound great. And the lighting was awesome and they looked great. And then you had a good time. And that's pretty much where it ends. But then when you're able to see all of the people and what they're putting into the entire production, like this summer.
I've been doing the same thing.
Summer 2019, there was, it was Cage the Elephant. They had like, it was Beck, but they were touring together, but Beck had like some lasers. And that was the first time that I had actually seen lasers from like backstage, like shooting up. And like, I could see them like go up into the top of the stage and stuff. And
yeah, like the roof.
Yeah. And it was like, it just made it so much more interesting. Cause then you start looking at like, you know, at the people up at front of house. And then you start looking at like, oh, well, like how are they doing that? Like, is that it's a mirror? And then it just becomes so much more exciting. And you realize how much people have to really think about where they place everything on stage and the timing and just all of these other things that are so far beyond what people notice. Like when you're right on stage, they see it as a whole, but the pieces in and of themselves are just so amazing. So could you explain to me a little bit, like when did you transition from like admiring the way that people put things and created a show to the individual elements that have influenced you and your work?
So I think that the big transition for me was age, because I grew up in New Jersey and spent some time in the Midwest as well, and was much part of like, you know, a hardcore, post-hardcore pop punk scene growing up. So like the moment where like I didn't want to or couldn't just like mosh and had to like stand and like watch what was going on, I had definitely had some revelations of like, oh, there's like people doing work here. It's not just like a band freaking out on stage while we just push each other around. So I think that was a big transition of like, suddenly I wanted to see all the moving parts. And even to the point where like, I love, one of my favorite things that I still do is I love watching people leave a venue, which sounds really weird, but like, it's just, you know, everyone gets there, they're excited, they have their tickets, there's all this order to getting in. And then leaving is complete chaos, but it's super organized chaos because you still have to leave. Like people have to walk out the exits and pick up their coats or whatever. But there's no one telling them to do that. On the way in, everyone's like, have your ticket, let me see your bag, go through this metal detector or whatever. And on the way out, you're just kind of like, oh, I'm just going to leave. And they all just kind of like in this elated joy that they've had from the show or in this good experience, they kind of just float out. And it's fun watching people's faces just kind of like unconsciously float out of a venue. You probably couldn't tell me the doors that you walked out of at 90% of the venue, even though it might not even be the one that you walked in. Like you kind of just float out. And like it happens at sports games too. You leave and you're just like, and sure, I'm sure there's alcohol and drugs involved in a lot of cases, but you had a good day. Like for 90 minutes or however long you watched the opening band as well, you know, you weren't at work. You weren't answering faxes. You didn't have to deal with your landlord or whatever. You're just like, you're there. So then when you leave, that kind of like falls into place and you're like, you're walking out and you get to have this, like, it's enough of an experience to be big enough so that like you're talking about it. You might be listening to the band that you just watched for 90 minutes in their car on the ride home, and real life doesn't set in for a much longer time, which I think is really important, especially now.
So you take all of the, you know, the technical elements, and then, you know, you help create the show, but really what guides you seems to be the full experience and like the feeling that comes from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can place lights and lasers, and like, you know, with Primus, I had like a bunch of screens and lasers and all this stuff. And I love the technical, like nerd stuff of it. Absolutely. Like I love the fact that I can program, and like there's syntax and there's codes and macros and all this stuff that I have to put in to make this show perfect and make it sound and make it time out perfectly and feel right. But I mean, the best times in the show are when like everything is going right and I get that moment to like look around and like, is everybody feeling how good about this as I am? And obviously not everyone's there like, oh, let's see what Graham's doing. Like they're obviously watching the band that they're paying for or coming to see. But you know, I want to make sure that people aren't like getting hit in the face too much, or if they're not, you know, where everything sits. And it's yeah, like feeling that kind of energy at front of house is what makes the creativity easier. Cause there's always technical issues. I mean, I've had to swap consoles mid shows, people have thrown beers, and like, you know, I mean, I've had multiple times with Danny, you know, power has gone out for the entire show for me, and like, well, the band's just going to play in the dark. And I'll just stand there. I'm like, well, I guess I'll just stand here and wait for the show to end. And it's just, you know, a million things can go wrong, but if you try to focus on the stuff that goes well and how that impacts the people who are actually there, which is the important part of a concert. Because one thing that this year has taught us is like, yeah, these live streams are great, but all those artists that are doing them, I don't want to say they're faking it, but like the fans play a major part in what live music is. Like, I've done a few podcasts and people have been like, oh, do you see like the future of live streams sticking around? And like, yeah, do I see people still doing them because they can't get across a border, or maybe they don't want to teleconference in, or like maybe this will allow like, okay, you're going to be on Kimmel, but we're going to do a live stream because you're going to have your first kid. Like I can see a little bit more of that becoming regular, but bands definitely want to look out and see fans singing their songs back to them. Like
there's no replacement for it.
No, there's no replacement for it. So I think coming back into the fold as things open up again, we will be pulled harder into making these experiences more impactful. So I do see like a bigger spectacles because people are going to be wanting more. Like you're going to need to overdose going the other direction.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on Clubhouse the other day, and there has been like that part has been coming on quite a bit, like in people's conversations where they'll talk about like hybrid shows where like they'll play They'll do like a live streaming, and then they'll also have like some sort of like socially distanced performance where there's still like some sort of audience. And you have these like tech people that will come in and they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, like this is the future. And everyone collectively, I've noticed, at least that like it is in live events, they're like, there's no, like there is no, it's not the same thing.
Like, yeah. And like you're reaching. And I see that because everything is always a ramp up in our industry. Like, and you can look at it from live music through history. I mean, you know, the Beatles playing in San Francisco during at Candlestick Park, like they headlined and they played 26 minutes. That was the headlining set for the Beatles in 1968. It was like, they played 28 minutes as a headliner and there was like nine bands before them. And now we have bands playing an hour and a half. You have amazing digital and electronic acts, like, you know, you have Skrillex and Dua Lipa and all these, and like no one wants to watch Skrillex stand in a room with no lights, no lasers, no pyro on a computer. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, that's not exciting. You can't Instagram about that. Like, hey, let me take a picture of a guy on a computer. Like, could do that at any Starbucks. Well, not right now, but you know, at some point. So I do like that there is a bridge in text. Like, how do we make this a normal thing? And like, you know, can we figure out a way to do a Hulu where like people just watch live shows? Yeah, there's going to be that kind of stuff, but it's never going to replace. Like, you just can't. You have to feel bass. You have to bump into a person and realize that you guys are both just having a great time at the same place. And like, you know, you want to go buy a shirt in person. Like, you know, I've watched a handful of live streams. One of my favorite bands, The Wonder Years, did one for Halloween. And, you know, I bought like the ticket and the shirt, and it's like, yeah, this shirt would feel better if it had to be stuffed in my pocket for the last 90 minutes. Then I had to walk around with it and worry that I dropped it three times. Like, for some reason, that's more of an experience than like, oh yeah, showed up at my Amazon door and then I sat and watched three people stand on stage, like on a TV. I don't think there's a replacement for it. I'm happy that people are working a way to find our people work through this, but this is not a permanent situation.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. So I think innovation and tech definitely has a place. And I think it allows people to be more creative, but you're right. It's like the most valuable part of live music is the live element. I mean, if you look at the Super Bowl, you know, I thought it was a fabulous performance. Like, I love The Weeknd.
Outstanding.
It was
same.
The reason that a lot of it was like up in the, like in the stands was because, you know, it just wasn't feasible to like, you know, build an entire production like on, you know, on the ground and then have to tear it down while social distancing and being safe.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like the last Super Bowl show, it was Shakira and Jennifer Lopez, I believe. Like, you have like over 1,200 people running out and each person has one job. Like, one guy is going to run out there and his job is to plug this speaker cable into that speaker. That's his only job. And you have, you know, 1,200 of that, like where one person, you put this thing here and you walk away. You can't do that social distance.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do think that like social distance concerts will be the first thing we see when things come back, like vaccines are rolling out, things are moving. And we're going to see like, we'll see the 2,000, 5,000 person shows happen first. So if your band plays to 2,000 people at a venue, you will get to go play for 5,000 person venue, but you only play to 2,000 people. Like, I think it's going to be a minute before we see bands like Coldplay and U2 and Pearl Jam, because you can't pay 60 person crew with half a stadium. It just doesn't work that way. Like, that's not good budgeting. It's not going to pay for truck drivers. It's not going to pay for meals. Like, or you charge insane amounts for the tickets, which again, I don't see ticketing agents and management doing, because everybody has just been off work for a year. Like, if you have to choose between paying half your rent or buying a Metallica ticket, I don't know why I use Metallica, because I definitely know plenty of people who would absolutely get evicted from Metallica. But there's going to be that change, and you're going to see, it's going to be a small ramp up. And then once things get open, it will be 18 months of like every venue is going to have an act in it every night, no matter what. Like, it's just because everyone's dying for it. And I think, as you know, obviously we are, because we're trying to work for it, but like, how great would your February be if you got to go see a show at the end of the month? Like, I know. It's sad even thinking about it.
My last show was February 2019. That was my last
Mine was March 13th, 2020.
Oh.
And yeah. And it was just like, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, definitely. I'm like, no, we both
know, don't. Yeah. Sad. We're all like, oh.
Something that, you know, with even like the show, right? So the Super Bowl, we were talking about how that, like, I understand why, you know, it was the way it was. And I think, it was a fabulous production. It was basically like a movie. It was great. But there was something missing. And what was missing was the crowd.
And even just seeing the crowd, like, that's like, you know, when camera shots pan over and, like, you know, I've been watching SNL and the socially distanced side of things. And, like, it's great having laughter because you couldn't do SNL without a live audience. And they figured out a way to do it so where you can still have laughter. But, like, you know, watching, I never thought, I'm not a big laugh track guy as far as TV goes, but, like, SNL is a live thing. Like, I want to see The Weeknd perform and then a camera pan to a bunch of people singing along. Like, because that's happening. It's a real in-moment feeling.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man. So, you know, one of the things that has come up in conversations, you know, lately also is the fact that because of the budgets and because of, you know, people probably not being able to pay like a huge stipend to like go see a show when the cap is so much smaller, we're going to be running into issues where, you know, there's going to be more demanded from people and sometimes the money may not necessarily be there. Do you see anything like that coming up?
So I'm hoping there won't be. I am hoping that this has taught our industry, especially in both management, you know, Live Nation, ticket agents, like the we are not for sale. Like I'm not going to be like the personnel and product and, you know, we are not an item to be bargained with. Like I didn't give up an entire year of income voluntarily. It was taken from me by a virus. So when I come back, I am going to be compensated the same way I was before because it wasn't my choice. And if management's and Live Nation and they're like, hey, we're going to, you know, we just can't make it work. It's like, okay, we're just going to need more transparency in the industry. Cause I know that there's major companies that have boards and shareholders and, like, you know, private jets. And again, this is not like an eat the rich thing, but, like, you know, if tours have to be smaller, like if I have to do like, okay, I don't get a 3-truck tour, I get a 2-truck tour, I will make that work creatively in the box, but you can't do it the other way. You can't be like, we have to have this giant thing. By the way, we can only pay you half your rate because I didn't, you know, when this happened, nobody helped. And I'm not, like, you know, we've had the Save Our Stages thing that's trying to get through Congress to keep venues alive. And, you know, Live Nation gave $1,000 to everybody and, you know, they're trying, but
it's not enough.
And again, I'm not trying to be greedy, but we are truly an industry that, I mean, even hotels and restaurants, like we are truly an industry that still is not back. Like pro sports teams are back. And like, yes, the concession workers aren't. And like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that isn't back, but we have literally been erased. So because we're so small and niche, like you can't just be like, oh, we're just going to hire people who will do it cheaper because there aren't any. Like for those of us who are serious and in this career, we have worked over the year to perfect our skills or work on them and keep in contact and maintain our connections. There will be probably a decent amount of openings for us to move up because I know a handful of guys who are going to retire. Like if you're 56 years old and you were thinking about hanging it up and spending the rest of your time with your grandkids or whatever you're doing, like, hey, I just got to sleep in my own bed for an entire year. And now I have to get back on a bus. And then they're going to say, by the way, you have to do it for half the money. No one's going to do that. Like, that's ridiculous. I got to make my own breakfast every day and, you know, sit on my couch every day. Like, you know, I didn't have to sit in an airport. I didn't have to, you know, and I love doing all those things, but there has to be a realization in the higher ranks and the people who are making money on the backs of what we're doing, because all the, you know, everyone can hashtag all you want. Oh, we're all family, blah, blah. It's like, it's real funny that we're all family when things are going great. And then the bottom drops out, and suddenly it's like, oh, we're going to need you to cut your costs. So I don't see it happening. I think it will happen to certain places, and I think everybody will get put on blast. And I'm hoping that the community will be able to survive it, because I just don't see, a way that, you know, some giant big band who's, you know, making crazy amounts on streaming and live streams can be like, oh, we're back. We've made just as much money as we did when we were touring, but we're now going to pay you less. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, the tendency is to think, oh, well, everybody's suffering, and so everybody has to make concessions and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, I mean, if we take a step back, like, people are making their salaries, and, like, yeah, you know, like, the money's there. You know, and same goes with government, right? There's always money for war, but there's never money to feed the people, right? So same situation.
And the big thing with live streams too is that people don't encounter, like, look at management companies for live streams. You know, if, try not to use any names I know. If a band, I'm not going to use a general band, if a band, like, gets to do a live stream on Kimmel and they are based in Philadelphia, okay, management didn't have to pay for 5 flights plus the crew flights plus hotels. So where'd that money go? So, like, you know, there's that, like, live streams are convenient in the fact that you don't have to travel, and that doesn't, you know, there's no trucking. There's no, if all the stuff is in one place, it's shown everywhere in the world, which I do hope brings more world touring. I hope that because of all these live streams, countries that didn't get bands before have now, because of the accessibility to the bands via live, are like, we want these bands. You know, we did a show with Incubus in South Africa, their first show ever in South Africa with them. And I think our, you know, we played in Pretoria for like 22,000 people. And it's like, it was one of the most amazing shows I've ever done. And everybody kind of had the same thing. It's like, why aren't we doing this once a year? Clearly there is a demand. Like, we could be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the metrics prove it, right? Because yeah, if you're getting the streams, like, you know that you're going to sell out the venue.
Yeah. So. If you're seeing, you know, blank blank in whatever country is this many people, it's like, okay, what's the biggest city size? Can we do a show here? Will it logistically work? So I think this, the data mining on the forefront should balance out the, hey, we still want to get our paychecks on the back end, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you're also right about, you know, some people deciding to leave, one, because they were already on the verge, 'cause, you know, it was time, and other people because they simply couldn't make it. And so they jumped into a different industry. So the human capital that is still in there and is still, like you said, working on their skills and, you know, getting their COVID compliance certificates so everybody's on the same page, you know, all that time that's being put into making yourself better so that you can help the entire industry, that's something that I think needs to be recognized. And I think that it needs to pay off once things come back.
Yeah. And I also, there is, like, you know, I was lucky enough to, like, you know, my wife didn't lose her job. And, like, we obviously, you have to trim the budget and, like, really cut down on, like, what you can do. And also it helps that, like, you know, I love going to a bar and a venue, but, like, I can't. So that saves a lot of money.
Yeah.
But just, you know, there are people that, like, hey, I was up and comer and I might be able to get back in there, but I couldn't make this work while I was off work and I had to find something else. Like, I know plenty of friends in, like, the local lighting houses in Oakland who went to, like, okay, I'm now working for tech events, or I'm now, you know, they've transitioned within their industry, but to a more stable, permanent role that doesn't involve, like, oh, I might have to work 5 days in a row from midnight to 4 a.m. to load in the, you know, like, they've found a balance. So there is going to be that hole that needs to be filled by people like me and people who were able to, like, weather the storm enough to have a place when they come back, and be lucky enough to.
Yeah. And from what I've seen, you know, everyone seems to be trying to help each other, at least the people who are trying to stick it out. And, you know, there seems to be lots of conversations happening. There seems to be a lot of, you know, the word networking kind of annoys me, but there seems to be a lot, sure, of, like, you know, just, like, building on the relationships that they have, because, you know, a lot of people see each other at shows or, like, at festivals, and, like, you sort of know each other in passing. But now I feel like there's a little bit more of an emphasis, and, like, we're working on those relationships so that everybody can help each other once, you know, were able. So, I mean, even just the sharing of communication of like, you know, you sharing your experience with live streaming, or, you know, I had John on one of the episodes where he did an indoor show in Alabama, and like him sharing his experience, like all that stuff is really helping, I think, move the industry forward, because it erases those walls that tend to be there normally.
And even to a callback, what you were talking about early, like, you know, because of our career is so much of an experimentary adventure, like we have to experiment on how this is going to work. Like, yeah, well, I might have to wear a face mask and, you know, and like a full shield at front of house. Maybe. Will I do it? Of course. Like, I'm going to do what's best for the greater good to enable people to see concerts or for me to work. Like, you have to make those sacrifices, as if putting a mask on is a sacrifice. You have to be ready to roll with the punches. And I do think that because our industry is just that, you have a bunch of people who, when things open and when we are able to get back to doing what we do best, the punches will be easier for us to roll with, because that's what we do. Like, all of us have at one point or another, like, showed up at a venue and like one of the trucks didn't show up. How can we make this work? We have to do a show. Or, you know, there was a flat tire on the bus. Half the crew's not here yet. We got to load in without them. Like, you make it work, because, you know, they always say the show must go on, and it definitely will and does. So,
is there anything you'd like to see moving forward? Would you like them to welcome you guys back in a certain way?
I don't know if I need like a welcoming party or a parade or anything like that. This is the first time I've ever thought about that. So, I mean, you know, wouldn't be bad to get like a
with the Chipotle culture, gift card, right? Once in a,
yeah,
I know,
sure.
Right? Yeah, like, actually, I would like some flowers.
Actually, in the last handful of years, I've started getting like thank yous from crowd members, like walking out like, hey, thanks guys for doing all your hard work. And like, I think that has become possible due to Instagram podcasts like yours. Like, people are more than ever in tune with what actually is going on. It's not this big mystery. There's, you know, Oz isn't behind the curtain. Like, he's standing in front of house doing this. So I think there's been a lot of that. I do see a more like understandable journey for patrons who realize that like, hey, it wasn't just the band that was like not being able to play shows. I think that you'll see a little bit more of that. Maybe we'll get an extra beer here or there at the bar. But I think as a whole, I think just being welcomed back to do what we do. And the biggest thing is there needs to be something in place with bands and management to prevent this from happening again. And I'm not saying like there needs to be some sort of like fund or 401k, but like there needs to be some sort of clarity on how, if this were to happen again, or if something like this were to happen. And we've even seen it in other situations. We've had terrorist attacks and domestic shooters at, you know, a handful of festivals. We've had stages blow over and they change the rules for when storms come in. Like, rules do tend to move pretty quickly in our industry because the industry moves fast. It is, you know, it's because there's such a small group of us. It's not like a slow grinding bureaucracy of like, oh, we'll get there one day. Like, we, you know, a stage collapsed, killed six people. And within 2 months they had like, hey, here's how weather needs to be tracked for outdoor stages. And like, I would like to see something like that come. So when we do come back, we're not all like, oh, what happens if a new virus comes out in 5 months? What happens if we only get a taste of this?
Yeah. What's the procedure?
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be some massive, like, overthought procedure. It just needs to be like, hey, if you were, you know, there needs to be some sort of insurance where that, like, if your tour is canceled because of something like this or a hurricane or whatever, like, the band doesn't take a hit by having to pay their crew for the time missed. Like, there needs to be some sort of show insurance that doesn't just protect the band and the management. It needs to protect the employees. Because if a show gets canceled from a band member being sick, we all still get paid while we're out there because we're still getting paid. But when a tour gets canceled and just swept out from under us, there needs to be something protecting the people that are putting it together. So yeah, it'd be nice to see some firm do that.
Yeah, you need somebody to go to bat for you, you know?
That's where I plug Geico. Get on it, Geico.
I love it. So, Graham.
Yeah.
It seems that you really enjoy what you do. You're willing to roll with the punches and see where it takes you. And you seem to be, you know, in love with it enough to want to continue doing it regardless of the setbacks.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone who isn't so sure?
I mean, I've always been like a passion player, regardless of what I do. Like if I'm going to cook a meal, like I want it to be awesome, whether it is or not. Like I want to try my hardest and like, you know, I play hockey regularly and, you know, if I couldn't do what I do for music, I would love to sit and like work for the Sharks and do like their lighting show every day. But I guess the thing is, the one thing about this pandemic that has taught everybody is you need to definitely search out joy because life is extremely unpredictable and crazy short. So if you were having doubts about anything you're doing, you know, give yourself time to figure out if those doubts were bred out of panic, if they were bred out of confusion, or if they were actually how you feel. And if, you know, if you're waking up and you're like, you know, I just don't know if I want to get on that bus again, or I don't know if I'm comfortable flying 150 times a year anymore. Like if that's really deep rooted, then just take your time. Like, you know, like you said earlier, like it's about the journey. Like find what is going to make you happy while you're doing it, because the end result might just never show up. You might try your hardest for your whole life to be the best guitarist in the world, and I can tell you what, there is never going to be a best guitarist in the world. So you're, you know, if you're hoping to cash out when you are the best, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, it's interesting because one of the reasons that I started the show was because I witnessed how it can be really difficult to keep going when you don't see an end or you don't see something bigger that it's leading to. Like for, you know, something really simple is like, well, I don't have a retirement plan. So like, what am I even doing? You know, like something like that.
Sure.
However, I think it's really important, like you said, to focus on how you feel today, how your experience has affected you in the past, and how you can use what you have. And, you know, if you do love what you're doing, that there is a way to make it sustainable if you just put a little bit of effort into figuring out a way to make it sustainable.
Yeah. And I think that, and a big thing too, is you have to ask for help. Like, you know, whether it be like, if you need therapy, which I'm a huge advocate for, like if you go to the gym to work out your body, how is a therapist different from working out your mind? Like, it's the same thing to me. Like you should definitely be always working on yourself to make sure that you're happy with you. So if you need, you know, if you're having trouble with the stage design, if you're having trouble, like making the connections, our community is small enough to where like, you should be able to text and just be like, hey man, can't find any work. It's like, oh, let me connect you with a couple other people. You know, like we don't get a, we don't have a LinkedIn. I mean, we do, there's like Facebook groups and there's crew space, but like, you know, realistically you get most of your jobs at a festival sitting at a dining table with people you haven't seen in 4 years.
Like, or oh, at the I'm bar just, like, complaining yeah,
or,
about
or
your
or
job.
At a bar or, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's just part of like, we're, I think our industry especially is really good at listening because not a lot of people know we're there. So you can only really talk to each other. Like when I, you know, even my, like my parents, like, I mean, they love what I do and they've known what I've done now for a long time, but you know, when their friends find out what I do, they're like, wow, you sleep on a bus. I'm like, that's the thing you're taking away from this. Like I, you know, 157 flights a year, 46 countries, and you can't believe that I sleep on a bus. Like that's the shocker. So it's interesting to have, you know, have a community where like you can tell as many people that you want what you do, and very few understand it unless you tried it. Even like my wife, I've had her out on tour a few times and she's like, I just, you know, she's amazing out there and she does a lot of the video content for a lot of the bands I work for. But it's one of those, she's just like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to be awake for 19 hours a day and like not sleep and be cold and eat cold food. Like, this isn't as enjoyable as you make it. And it's like, well, you have to make it enjoyable. You have to figure it out.
Yeah. And you have to figure out if, you know, if you find it enjoyable, if you do, do what it takes.
Right.
And you know, the whole reaching out for help, I think is really important. And I think it comes up in a lot of conversations. It really does. You know, it's like, don't be afraid to ask for help because like you said, there's no set path. There's no flow chart that helps you decide what you're going to do every time you're making a decision. And the best resource is to really look toward your peers and to have a culture of transparency so that you're not working against each other and you're more working to help each other.
Yeah, which I think that, you know, I think that I wish, you know, a lot of things were more like that. I mean, even like local music scenes, I played in bands for years and like you end up competing with each other when you should be working together to get bigger paying bills. Instead, you're like, oh, the headliner gets $50 and the, you know, so you're working, like you should be, there should be a little bit more of banding together in the sense that like, we've got, like, we're the ones who are doing this. Like, you can't just put a, you know, an ad on Craigslist being like looking for lighting engineer or lighting designer, 10 years experience, apply within, like, you know, let me just show up on a tour bus with a resume. Although that does happen. Yeah. If you're ever worried, they get filed somewhere.
I love it. Well, Graham, it was amazing talking to you. Thank you so much. And I really do. I hope that, you know, more of these conversations can keep happening, even just among friends, and we can build a culture that takes care of each other moving forward.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you for doing this podcast and kind of giving us a little bit of a platform to like discuss the stuff that we've literally just been muttering to ourselves in the shower for the last 7 months.
Of course. Well, we'll talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Graham Rolick. 1, don't define yourself by your job title and career. You're so much more than that. Take time to discover who you are outside of how you make money. 2, a million things can go wrong during a show, so it's important to focus on the things that go right and the feeling that you get from bringing live music to the fans in order to make the experiences more impactful. That's what will keep you going when times get tough. 3, live music industry professionals are not an item to be bargained with. Ask for what you think is fair and don't forget that you do have value, so stand up for yourself. 4, ask for help when you need it, whether it's a therapist, a personal trainer, or a colleague who can help you expand your connections and help you find your next gig. And 5, don't compete and work against your colleagues. Try to work toward transparency. That's how we transform the culture of the industry for the better. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Graham a follow on Instagram at Graham Rolick. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.